So I fermented this in my ceramic globe as well. Which,
say that again, because I know you like saying that.
I do. It's basically a Fabergé egg for wine.
It's so cool.
Yeah.
I got to come touch your egg.
Yeah, you can.
Hello, friend. I am thrilled that you have joined me for another episode of Sip with Nikki. I'm Nikki Lamberti here in Sonoma County, California. And if you're a first-time listener, welcome to the party. And if you're a regular listener, thank you. I see you and I'm grateful for you. If you keep listening, I'll keep talking. If you listened to last week's episode, you heard me teasing a new, very cool membership that I'm putting the finishing touches on. And I'm so excited to be able to invite you to be a part of our SIP community. Soon, I'll be rolling it out and sharing with you the different perks that come along with being part of this club. But my favorite one is going to be a private group that you'll be able to join where we can interact together. Because let's face it, podcasting's a little one-sided. I can't see you. You can't see me. I can't hear from you. So we'll be able to actually have two-way communication. And I'm thrilled to be inviting previous guests from the podcast to live streams that will happen in that group where you can actually meet them and get your questions answered. So how do you get an invite to this club? If you're not already on my email list, visit sipwithnikki.com/resource. You can sign up there and then you'll be the first to know when Club Sip is live. So one of the very first episodes of Sip with Nikki back in December 2023 was a very good friend of mine and someone that I admire greatly. And that is Sally Johnson Blum, aka SJB. Now, Sally and I met working at Pride Mountain Vineyards, where she was the winemaker for 15 years. But a couple of years ago, she left and she's been busy. So today we're catching up on everything that she has been doing, from getting ready to launch her own small brand called Stereograph, which is a partnership with her husband, Max, who I also adore, as well as her new firm called SJB Winemaking, where she is making wine for multiple small clients, both in California and in Washington State. And in over 25 years of making wine, she has certainly racked up the accolades. In addition to receiving multiple 100-point wine scores from Robert Parker, having multiple wines on Wine Spectator's top 100 wines of the world list, which is something only I can dream about. She's had over 30 of her wines served at the White House in different state dinners. And here it is, my favorite. She is one of Glamour Magazine's top 10 badass female winemakers. I mean, we can just stop there. My favorite thing about Sally is she is just a really kind, warm, down-to-earth person. And every time I talk with her, I learn so much and I walk away more inspired than when we started. So I'm so excited for you to get to know Sally as we have a double sip spotlight in this episode. And she shares with me two brand new wines that are just releasing. We talk about some of her projects that are in the works. She shares with me a surprising 50th birthday present that she bought for herself that I am super jealous of. And then we talk about the different trends that we're seeing with both of us owning small wine brands and having worked in the business together. We are definitely seeing trends in the business, in the younger generation and what they're consuming as far as wine, how they're consuming it. We swap our thoughts about the current challenges of being small women-owned wine brands in today's market. And we certainly do talk about the T word, tariffs, and how that is affecting the world that we live in. I'm so excited for you to get caught up with Sally and everything that she has been doing. It's a lot. So here we go with SJB. So I cannot believe that I nailed you down. You stopped moving long enough to come over to my house for pizza night tonight. Yay! But I was like, we need to record. We need to re-record. It's been a year and a half since you were one of our very first guests on Sip with Nikki. So welcome back, Sally!
Thank you.
I don't know why I'm singing. I don't know why I do that.
I love it.
And girl, you've been busy in the last year and a half. So let's just start there. Catch us up and
Why are you always moving and never stopping? What is happening? That's two really great questions to why I'm always moving. Maybe midlife crisis. I don't know. I had a big birthday last year, which you celebrated with me.
Yeah. 50. Right behind you. Yeah, that's
she's
I have a
not
lot
quite
to say
50
it.
Yet. I'm coming. I guess I feel very inspired. I feel like I have all this energy and creative ideas and I'm just going for it. And also starting a brand is very expensive. So if people
yes,
want to,
I know this,
if people want to hire me to make wine, I'm like, I'm going to make it work and I'm going to do the best job I can. So yeah, busy. Yeah.
So starting a brand is Stereograph, which mm-hmm. we're going to talk about. And that's you and your husband, Max, as a partnership. Mm-hmm. But then when you talk about other people hiring you, so you are basically a winemaker for quite a few different brands. And that's very different. That's a departure from working at Pride, where we worked together for 15 years. You know, now you're based at Tampa Bay, but you have all these different small clients in California and Washington. What led you to want to move away from just making one portfolio for one awesome producer to like touching all of these different small projects?
I guess at this third stage in my career, I wanted to see what I was capable of. I spent the first 8 years of my career at St. Francis, the second 15 years, as you mentioned, at Pride. I've always played this very traditional 5-year plan, 10-year plan, had a really strong connection to the site and the people that I was working with. And now that I suddenly wake up and I find myself in the middle of my life and at the apex of my career, I'm empowered to challenge myself. I think that for me, it's always been really important to stay excited and engaged and to keep learning new things. And so I ended up very much outside of my wheelhouse, and it's been really inspiring and enlightening, and yeah, definitely keeps me coming up with new ideas and busy all day.
So how does that work for our listeners that don't quite understand? You can be a winemaker at one place, or you can be a consulting winemaker, which is called. How does that work? How do people find you, and how do those partnerships come to be where people say, hey, I have a vineyard in my backyard, but I don't know how to make wine. Can you come in and make this wine for me? How does that come to fruition, and how do those connections get made?
So much of wine is word of mouth. It's a very small community, even internationally. But I would say one thing, I'm not a consultant in the sense of giving people advice and popping in every couple of months with some opinions. I really do prefer to be the hands-on winemaker. I'm just working for smaller brands that don't need a full-time person. And so the workload is a lot less. So it gives me the time to juggle all of these different projects. Yeah, they all evolved very naturally.
And you're a badass and people seek you out because you're like famous in this neck of the woods. I'm just saying.
It's hard for me to say no to a beautiful vineyard or someone who is passionate about wine the way I am. Yeah, I guess I'm just really into making wine. But one thing about consulting is learning how to run a business. For me, that's been very much outside of my comfort zone. I know you can relate too with your own brand and all of the many different projects that you have on your plate.
It's a whole nother learning beyond the wine piece is the business piece. And I think it's exciting to be in this parallel with you as people that have to, I came at it more from the sales and the business side of my background. You, of course, have more of the formal winemaking experience. And now we're both having to like flip hats and learn the other side, which is cool. Tell me this past harvest. So for the 2024 harvest this fall, how many different wines did you have your hands in?
Oh gosh, I don't even think I know.
It doesn't have to be like specific wines within a brand, but how many labels will Sally have touched?
Some of my projects have multiple brands and labels. I would say about 10 projects that I'm involved in, ranging from very small. For one client, I make 3 barrels of Oakville Cabernet from his home vineyard. Yeah. Up to what I would call medium size. Tambor Bay is my largest project, and they do about 8,000 cases of wine.
And you have been commuting by jet plane.
Yeah, I work in Washington State too. I have 2 projects up there. So one is this amazing winery called The Walls. It's owned by Michael Martin, the former legal counsel for Microsoft. He fell in love with Washington wine. He developed a winery there, and now has three separate brands that are being produced out of that winery. So it's The Walls, which is making eclectic and classic wines from all over Washington State. Pasha, which is a drill down on the rocks district, just really distinctive, beautiful Rhone varieties. And then the third is called Stanley Groovy. So this is a really fun...
It's a fun name.
It's like
a
groovy, fun name. Like Groovy Groovy?
Yeah. The character Stanley Groovy was created by a cartoonist who works with The New Yorker. He does all of the branding, all the labels. It's really fun. And Stanley is just this kind of cool character who's unpretentious, but smart and cool and loves wine. And so the Stanley Groovy wines are really accessible and showcase that lighter personality of fun. Wine.
Oh, I it's love really it. Fun. When you say eclectic wines, the first one you talked about with The Walls, eclectic wines, what are some examples of what you'd call eclectic?
We make a Tempranillo called Ooh. Wonderful Nightmare.
What? Yeah. Did they name that or did you?
They did. That's no, cool. no. Michael comes up with all of these amazing names. So that name comes from an Ernest Hemingway story about the running of the bulls. And so making Tempranillo, it's a Spanish grape. So Pamplona, that's the inspiration. But it's also a wonderful nightmare because in certain years, the crop just does not set at all. So you get no fruit.
Yeah.
in
and
other
and
years.
And sleep yeah, when that happens. No sleep. Hence the nightmare.
Yeah. In other years, it's a dream come true. So it's really a challenging grape, but when it turns out perfectly right, it is beautiful.
I feel like a lot of our listeners, even though they're big wine drinkers, there's probably not a lot of Tempranillo knowledge, awareness, purchasing happening. And I feel like if I can turn people onto it, that's one that they're like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know. Like it's fantastic Spanish grape. So that's fun. And then there is a new project perhaps blooming this spring. Tell me about your pink wine.
Yeah, I get to be, what is it, like the Traveling Wilburys? It was like the super group with all the big rock stars. So this is a parallel. So it's Molly Hill, Ashley Hepworth, and me. We've each been making wine since 1999. Some great wineries. Ashley was at Joseph Phelps for over 20 years. Prior to that, she was a chef with Charlie Trotter. Molly Hill was with Sequoia Grove for 18 years. She's currently getting an MBA at UC Berkeley. And then there's me.
Wow.
Yeah, between the three of us, we've known each other for many years.
Did you all go to school together at UC Davis?
No. Molly and I both went to Davis, but we didn't really overlap. And Ashley comes from a culinary background. So.
And so the three of you have partnered up.
Yes.
And what's happening?
It's really Molly's vision. She pitched this to me and Ashley in 2023 when we all left our roles. And the vision is to demonstrate that Napa Valley can do more than just great Cabernet. So the three
Amen.
Of us.
Say it again for the back row. Yeah. One more time.
Ooh. Napa Valley can do more than great Cabernet. So we all are Cabernet winemakers. That's really what we have made our reputations on. And Molly had this great idea to make an old vine rosé of Grenache. Using all of that attention to detail, all of the winemaking bells and whistles that we could throw at it, every single thing about this project has been done with white gloves. We fermented it in a ceramic globe and a new Dami French oak barrel.
Cheap bougie. From 2024,
yes.
Rosé.
Mm-hmm.
And the name is?
The name is A Bloom.
Okay. And I don't want to give too much away because hopefully we're going to have you and Molly and Ashley together and we can let our listeners know all the details about this project. But when is this releasing?
Unofficial release party is next Thursday. And then the official release will be as soon as our website is finished. So probably within 3 weeks.
Girl, just one more project.
I know.
Seriously, I'm like just inspired and tired at the same time listening to you.
Yeah, me too.
I want to talk about this very cool project that you've been working on for a bit, which is Sylvie.
Yeah.
And you have been kind enough to bring the 2024 Semillon. And I'm excited to introduce the listeners to Semillon because, again, I think it's a underappreciated.
Yeah.
So while you're telling us about that, I'm going to get this Sylvie Napa Valley Semillon in our glass for our first sip spotlight.
Sip spotlight.
And now we don't even need to put the jingle in. Okay, do you want to sing it together?
Okay.
Okay, one, two, three. Sip spotlight. Oh my God, Tony, you're You guys, we did not talk about practicing that. She just spontaneously did that on her own. Thank you for being a nerd with me.
Sip spotlight.
So tell me about Sylvie and how this project came to be part of your portfolio.
Our good mutual friend, Allison Mulligan, is the director of experiences and allocations. Always been a fan of their wines. They produce these gorgeous Oakville Cabernets.
Yes. So delicious.
Yeah. And so the vineyard is actually in the process of being redeveloped. 2023 was the last vintage from the old vines. And so I came on in 2024 to create this special wine to help us transition to the future. As the vineyard is replanted, it comes back into production. We wanted to do something.
It takes some time before you have grapes again after replanting.
Yeah. And so Sylvie is named after the owner's mother, who was this amazing, inspirational woman who emigrated from Finland with no money, very plucky, made her own way. And in her later years, she lived with her daughter and her son-in-law at their home in Oakville. And when she was ready to unwind at the end of the day, she would tap the seat next to her and tell her son-in-law, Henry, get me a glass of white wine. I want to get my glow.
Aww.
Yeah. And then come sit by me. I'm going to tell you a story. Aww. And so we always had this intention of creating a wine to really acknowledge that spark, that beautiful person who inspired the name of the brand. This was the perfect opportunity to do it. Allison told me that they were fans of Pride Viognier, which made me
not. Listener, go back 3 episodes to Viognier to listen all about it.
Yeah, but I didn't want to do a Viognier for Sylvie because I felt that Pride is doing such a beautiful job with that. I don't want to create.
You did a beautiful job with that for 15 years.
Yeah.
And Matt, your successor, is doing a bang up job as well.
But Matt's great.
Well, just make killer Viognier of Pride, all of you.
Yeah. So I wanted to do something in that richer style instead of a Sauvignon Blanc, which would be more crisp and lean. I didn't want to do Chardonnay. I thought it wasn't enough of an exciting spark for what Sylvie is. And so I was scratching my brain for a while. And then I thought, oh, let's do a Semillon. It's something that you don't see all the time. It's
not a lot of it planted.
Yeah, there's not a lot of it planted. It is undeniably one of the world's great wine varieties. It's part of those great Bordeaux blends, the white blends. And so I thought it would be really fun. And I wanted to do neutral barrel fermentation to build up that texture. I did some malolactic, but it's still very floral and aromatic. So I really love how it came out.
I have it in the glass, so I'll be the judge of your floral and aromatic notes. Oh my goodness. Yeah. And for people that don't know this grape, when you stick your nose in the glass, it's almost like process of elimination. You could be like, it doesn't smell like Chardonnay. Doesn't smell like Viognier. Mm-hmm. It doesn't smell like Sauvignon Blanc. It smells like its own thing, and I haven't even tasted it yet, but it's so unique. And that's Sylvie on the label, right? This beautiful
that
label.
Is, yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about someone you know that maybe participated in the design of this label?
Yeah, my husband did this label design, Max Blum. So he is actually working with me and a number of my small projects. He did our labels for our own brand. He did Sylvie. He did our client Bansal, which is the 3 barrels of Oakville Cabernet. He's super creative.
He is super creative.
Yeah.
I'm amazed by his visual, graphic design, artistry. It's like a different type of creativity than making wine.
Yeah,
right?
Very much. It's like making wine is all about the details and being extremely organized, whereas what he does is all about every day is a new day.
You guys are a great team.
We are opposites attract, right?
Yeah.
The label is beautiful.
It is.
And it comes from an old photograph of Sylvie,
correct? Yeah, it comes from a black and white photograph of her dancing on the beach in Finland as a girl. And Max turned it into this beautiful watercolor. The paper is very textural. It's so calm and soothing and just joyful. When it was on the bottling line, I took a little video and I sent it to Allison and I told her, oh, Sylvie's dancing, because as the bottles were spinning around, she was
She's in a pose that's like reaching up very gracefully. Mm-hmm.
Is this the first white wine for Sylvie?
It is. Okay.
Yeah.
So
what do you think listeners need to know so they can find this and order this? What should they be expecting?
Meon, for me, it is a textural but aromatic wine. So it's not Chardonnay that is really more defined by sometimes the barrel flavors. This is really very fruit driven. I get a lot of melon, nectarine.
Yes.
I get
melon for sure.
Lily, narcissus type of flavors.
Narcissist? Who's a narcissist in the glass? What?
He knows a flower name, right?
Yeah.
Cheers.
Cheers. Oh
my gosh. Thank you for bringing this over to my house.
And we had this, actually, this is your second time tasting it, because we had it a couple weeks ago with the most amazing pea puree.
Oh my gosh. I feel so guilty that I didn't make that appetizer today, because you and our other friend Dana are still talking about it. I'll put the recipe in the show notes, listeners, because it is a delicious, very springy appetizer. And it is it's a puree, almost like a pesto, but you make it with spring peas, and then you spread it over on a little crostini, and then you drizzle it with honey and salt and lemon and parmesan, and it's just like a one bite wonder. And shame on me, I should have made that for today, but I made other things like grilled artichokes and things like that.
Have been busy. I think that was like a classic pairing. I will definitely serve that with this wine.
Yeah. It's got a little weight to it.
Yeah, it is a little bit of a phenolic. It's got some texture. It's not, I wouldn't say it's bitter or astringent, but it definitely has some presence, that long finish.
Can you tell our listeners, when you use that word phenolic, what does that mean to them?
Grapes, as they're ripening in the sun and they're being inundated with that bright sunlight, they are synthesizing these chemicals in their skins that act as a form of sunscreen. And this is what we use as antioxidants. So these chemicals, not only do they protect from the sun, but they also have supposed health benefits in people. And so,
again, say it louder for the back row. Yeah.
I don't want to get sued, but I feel
we are not doctors, but she does know the chemistry of wine.
All of that sunshine stimulates the production of these chemicals. They're phenolic compounds. So that means they have a phenol ring, which is six carbons and a little.
We're getting into organic chemistry. Fast forward.
Yeah. Anyway, it's super bioactive. It helps to scavenge free radicals like ozone or other chemicals that might be in our environment, and helps to bind them up and remove them so that we're not feeling the effects of those oxidizing compounds.
That's just the magic of wine chemistry, right? And some of the benefits. Do you think this wine tastes like it smells?
That's a good question. I feel like it is richer than I would expect from the nose. Yeah, it definitely has more
weight. It's soft and viscous and just kind of hugs the side of my mouth. And then we have some little bites here. We've got some Beemster aged Gouda. We've got some Marcona almonds. We've got some spicy salami, some flatbread, some ghost pepper cheese, which can be tricky with wine because there's spice. And then this is a beautiful Syrah cheese, right? But the rind is soaked in Syrah. So fun. I've just been sipping and having some bites and seeing how it plays, and I love it with the Gouda.
Yeah,
that's a beautiful wine. Thank you for sharing that.
Oh, thank you.
Let's talk about Stereograph. So this is your own baby, your project. Since I think that I met you in 2012 at Pride, you shared about having this goal and desire, and as we both know, it takes some time to get there. So first of all, let's start with the name Stereograph.
Yeah, Stereograph means two perspectives, one vision. So my husband, Max, the creative guy, in addition to designing wine labels, playing heavy metal guitar and raising our kids,
he shreds.
He also sells Victorian photography. He has an eBay site. He is really into it. And so a stereograph is a form of Victorian photography where you have two photos that are almost identical. And when you look at them through a very kind of wonky looking
like a viewer that we used to have as kids,
yeah, exactly.
Right?
You see it in three dimensions. And so for us, it sort of represents how he's bringing the style, the look, the touch. It's very textural. And I'm bringing everything that's inside of the bottle. So
I love it. I love the partnership. And this is a Chenin Blanc 2024. So also a less familiar white grape for a lot of just everyday wine drinkers. I love drinking Chenin Blanc from South Africa. And that was my first introduction into it. But there is a little bit of acreage here in Napa Valley. So what led you to want to do Chenin?
I didn't think I would do a white wine at all, actually, because my husband doesn't really like to drink white wine.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. But he was the one who felt we need a white wine. He wanted to have a wine for everyone. So we're able to host tastings at Tambour Bay. And he said, you know, not everyone wants to drink Cabernet. So let's
More people are drinking so white, don't you think? Mm-hmm. Just something lighter and fresher and lower alcohol tends to be the trend.
Absolutely.
Smart to launch the portfolio with that.
Yeah. So I was also scratching my head on this one. What am I going to do? It's really important to me to do unique wines for each of my clients. I don't want to make make everyone a Semillon or make everyone a Chenin Blanc. I want to do things that are unique and special for each project. So I was just driving up to a vineyard with a grower friend of mine, and he pointed out the window and he said, "That's my Chenin Blanc vineyard there. It was planted in 1947.
What? That's crazy.
I know,
right? Did you say that's like your mom's birth year or something?
My mom's birth year, yeah. So I said, "Josh, oh my God, I need fruit from that vineyard. You have to sell me a ton of your grapes."
Come on, Josh.
I know. Yeah. I really had to work him down. I had to grind him down. They were already allocated to other people, and those people are probably not super happy to...
This is where the relationships come into play, like you said, with this business, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, let's move on to Chenin for our second sip spotlight.
Yes.
Sip spotlight. You're so cute.
Cheers.
Cheers. You've listened to a few of these podcasts, right?
Regular. First time, long time, right?
Yes. Okay. First guest, long time listener. Happy to have revisiting as a guest. All right. So Chenin Blanc, also 2024, also Napa Valley, but a totally different white wine. Even just the hue of them in these bottles. This is a little more green tinge to it, where the Semillon has a little more golden hue. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely.
It smells totally different on
the nose.
Totally
different, right?
No narcissist in there. It's more citrusy for me.
Yeah, almost like a verbena. Like there's like a floral, but it's like an herbaceous floral. Mm. I definitely get the citrus.
I know verbena from Bath & Body Works circa 1995.
Oh, yeah.
There was a verbena lotion that we all used to buy. And that's like my baseline marker for the
so
verbena
funny.
Note. Yeah. Immediately, the texture in the mouth is totally different. And not that I'm needing to compare them, but that's just what we do when we have one to another, right? Same winemaker, white to white. But the texture of this is a little bit lighter for me.
Definitely.
And different acidity on the finish. Tell me more about that.
Yeah. When we harvested it, the pH, I can get a little nerdy with you because you're a winemaker too, but
let's talk about pH. Yeah.
It was 3.01, which...
Okay. That's a low pH. We're like 3.4, 3.5, 3.6, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the Semillon is more like 3.4. Okay. This is a logarithmic scale, so it's 10 times more acidic for every 0.1 of pH that you change. So this is a very high acid grape variety. For that reason, I did want to build in some nuance and texture because I knew there was going to be a lot of zing in there. So I fermented this.
Zing? Was that word zing?
That's a technical term.
People can relate to zing.
Right. So I fermented this in my ceramic globe as well. Which
say that again, because I know you like saying that.
I do. It's basically a Fabergé egg for wine.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
I got to come touch your egg.
Yeah, you can. I think I might let my kids like paint it. They have this special glaze that you can use, which I think would be really cool. So yeah, this was my 50th birthday present for myself.
It's a great present.
It is a really cool present. It has this gorgeous blown glass fermentation lock that goes on top to let the CO2 bubble out. And the texture that you get in that globe is really distinctive. It's like in between stainless, which is very fresh and bright and really retains all the aromatics and the acid, and then concrete, which is really textural, almost like neutral oak in terms of the texture that you get. And so this is like in the middle. It's got some body, got some texture, but still very fruit driven and expressive. And then after fermentation, I needed that globe for my rosé. So I moved this out into 2-year-old Gautier French oak barrels, really beautiful barrels from Burgundy.
What a fun, fresh wine. Both of these are beautiful, springy wines. But yeah, I love Chenin. I'll always order it when I see it on a menu because, again, I have fond association with it from South Africa, but really enjoying tasting it from other parts of the world, which is cool. Of our little bites on the plate, what do you think might be fun with the zing of the Chenin?
The Syrah cheese, what do you think?
Yeah, I just love that cheese. That's from Trader Joe's, people.
Wow, that is so...
Cheers. Cheers. Oh, yeah, that was nice with the cheese.
That is nice.
Because there's some zing in the cheese, too.
That's true,
and they sort of play well together.
We will be right back.
If you heard our 69th episode from April 2025, you heard my amazing conversation with Sina Wheeler.
Sina is from a fifth-generation fishing family, and she and her husband, Rich, founded Sina Sea. And he is a fisherman, and he catches wild, sustainably caught fish in Alaska, and then they cut it and package it and ship it to your door, and it's premium sushi quality when it arrives. You can create a subscription box, and they'll even guide you as to what's in season. For instance, May is the start of Copper River salmon season. In our episode, you heard Sina and I tasting this very salmon, which was delicious. And we made poke bowls and paired it with wine, of course. And I was really blown away, not only at the awesome quality of the fish, but the sustainability of the packaging when it arrived. And then the recipe card that was packed inside the box and how easy it was to prepare. So I'm so excited to introduce you to Sina Sea so that you can get your hands on the fish and have it shipped right to your door from a small family-owned business. They've been kind enough to create a discount code for our listeners. The code is SIPANDSEA, and you can use that at their website, SinaSea.com, S-E-N-A-S-E-A, SinaSea.com, for 10% off your order. This can be for a one-time purchase if you just want to try it out, or you can sign up and save with the subscription box. I also encourage you to sign up for their email list for great recipes and inspirations of how to incorporate healthy and beautiful fish into your diet regularly. They even do a monthly drawing for a $50 gift card for all the members on their mailing list. So go check out the delicious wild Alaskan fish at SinaSea.com. Healthy fish delivered easy. AmericanOliveFarmer.com is a business and a website owned and operated by my friend Liz Tagami and her husband Donald. They live up in Corning, California, and I recently had Liz on the podcast where we got to taste some of her delicious olive oils, both the Arbequina and Ascolano varieties, and they're grown and made right here in California. Well, the oils were really just the tip of the iceberg, because if you check out her website, you'll see that they import gorgeous balsamic vinegar from Modena. In fact, one of them uses three of my favorite Italian wine grapes as the base of the vinegar: Trebbiano, Lambrusco, and Sangiovese. I can't say that without singing. And while on their website, if you sign up to stay in touch, you'll receive their newsletter and you'll get the fantastic recipes that Liz and Donald have created using their beautiful products. I'm so excited to introduce all of you to American Olive Farmer, and Liz has kindly created a discount code for our listeners. Use the code SIPWITHNIKKI, capital S, capital W, and capital N, SIPWITHNIKKI, for $10 off your order, and that can be anything from the site, whether it's delicious olive oils, vinegars, or even gifts. I mean, you can send someone an olive tree as a gift. How cool is that? Check out AmericanOliveFarmer.com and support this fantastic, small, California-based, woman-led business. You can even set up an olive oil subscription. Go, check it out. You're welcome. And now, back to the show.
So I want to talk about white wine for just a moment. It's funny because you talked about how Max does not love white wine, but very smart to put it in the portfolio. Because I think, and keep me honest here, what I'm hearing and why I'm like, maybe we need to make a white or a rosé for Solivato, is people are drinking more whites and rosés and maybe backing off a little bit on the big Napa cabs, whether it's people in our generation who were drinking those things and are changing, or the next generation that we know is drinking a little bit differently. So what do you think about that and just the rise of white wine right now?
Yeah, I think that is so true. Just in starting to get out and share my wine with people, the reaction that I've gotten to the Chenin Blanc has been, it's just like a light bulb goes off. Mm-hmm. People are thrilled. They're excited. They can't wait to try it. So we're actually adding a second white wine this year. We're going to make some Fiano.
Wonderful white Italian
wine. I know. Maybe yes. That's something you want to consider.
Elizabeth makes that at Chimney Rock. Mm-hmm. Elizabeth and Laura, who are overdue to be on the podcast, ladies. They make Fiano, right? There's not a lot of it in the area as well. That's fun.
Maybe you want to get a little.
Yes, for myself. All right. See, this is how these things happen. You heard it. See, planted here. Yeah. And I think, too, what people appreciate about white is just the price point is generally always lower, because the time that it takes to make a white wine and put it in the bottle is always shorter than a red. And so that contributes a lot to just the cost of making it in there for the cost of the bottle. Mm-hmm. I think people appreciate that.
Yeah, I think also just not having to wait. I just bottled this wine and it's already tasting so great. I bottled my reds and I need to give them 6 months before I'll even share
them
with
people. They need to calm the F down, those big cabs in the bottle. Yeah. And that's just part of the process, part of the difference. So yeah, probably that instant gratification of I can buy it, it's fresh, it was just made and I can drink it is probably appealing to a lot of people as well, don't you think?
I think so.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think people are wanting to be excited about wine. I think the days of being excited about high scores might be transitioning to a new paradigm of being excited about something really unique that not everybody has tried.
This is a woman with multiple 100-point scores from Robert Parker under her belt. But yes, it is changing. And I feel like, not that scores and ratings are not important anymore, but again, this younger generation, I feel like that weighs less for them. Mm-hmm. And they are more about the story, the cause, the farming, the sustainability, and the philanthropy. Mm-hmm. Things are definitely changing. In fact, what would you say would be some of the trends or the biggest changes that you've seen just in the year and a half, in December of 2023, when you did your first podcast interview with me, of the just state of wine and the market of wine? What would you say are the biggest changes?
There's a lot of talk about the younger generation not liking wine. I don't think that's true. I did an event at the Ferry Building in February. It was packed. There were probably 500 young people there, super excited about wine.
30. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And they were eager to chat about how the wine was made and what was the story. I think it is true that prices of wine need to come down a bit. There's only so much room for $300 Cabernet in the market. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the collectors who have focused on those really prestigious high-end wines have full cellars. They might not need to buy so much wine.
Beyond.
Yeah.
Who I meet every day at Pride and they say, my wine cellar is going to outlive me.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is another reason why I want to make wines that are accessible. Even my reds, I'm making wines that I really love. I think they do represent me, but I want them to taste great within a year or two of purchase. They'll still age. I hope that people will want to age them, but I think most people will probably...
It's not necessary.
Yeah,
it's not necessary. Yeah. So interesting. We could do a whole episode just on the trends and what we're seeing, especially as we go back to what you mentioned earlier with both of us launching small brands and having to put on our business hat and our marketing hat. And you can't just make the wine and it sells itself. The market is very saturated with wine brands. And so it's all about how do we make ourselves different on top of making fantastic wine. That's the non-negotiable. But then the story and the marketing is just as important.
That
and I
so
think
true.
You and I both have the same love-hate with social media.
Yeah.
We know the importance of it, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and I do think that wine tasters, people who come to Napa or Sonoma or any wine region, they really want experiential, they want food. We're definitely going to be offering bites with our experiences.
Nice.
Just to create and cement a real memory and relationship. I think that's really part of it because people can buy any number of products, you know, just based on
shelves and shelves in the store.
Totally. And the way our alcohol system is regulated, it's pretty hard for someone to seek out a small brand and order it and have it delivered to a different state. So
I made it easy. That. Even the year 2025, all of the laws on compliance and shipping, and you can ship here, but not here, and how many bottles. It's we are all having to navigate that.
Yeah. So I think in order to entice people to take that extra step and go to the trouble of buying your wine, you really do need to have a genuine interest in your consumer too. And who are they? What are they about?
Having that interest in the consumer. And then finally, the other thing that has complicated all of that in current day, because a lot of the supplies that we get, like barrels, come from France and my bottles come from Italy. So talk to me about tariffs.
Gosh.
And how have you seen that affecting you already? Or have you?
Oh, yes. 100%. Yeah. My glass has gone up 28% overnight. My barrels, I've had to sign a waiver saying, I don't know what the tariff will be when they're delivered, but I agree that I will pay X amount of it. It is definitely a challenge, for sure.
And packaging and barrels specifically, importing things.
I mean, corks are this amazing sustainable closure. These forests have been around for hundreds of years. if they're ripped out and not producing corks anymore, they'll be developed or used for some other type of product. And so in order to get corks, you need to plant a forest and then wait. And then wait, yeah, about 9 to 40 years before you can.
It's a big range.
It's a big range.
9 to 40.
Yeah. So yeah, we are committed to using natural cork.
Yeah.
Screw caps have their own.
Screw caps. Oh, screw caps. Get it. Okay.
Yeah.
I feel the same way.
Yeah.
Just the tradition of it, the same sustainability of it, and the way that the wine ages exactly. under a cork, we know is different. Mm-hmm. My last question around tariffs and the world that we're in right now, how do you think that these tariffs on imported wines, and people like me that love to drink Italian wines and French wines and Spanish wines, how do you think that's going to affect the U.S. and specifically the California and Washington wine market?
I don't think it will benefit anyone who loves wine. I think that I've already heard that distributors are at risk of closing down because they can't get their European wines that are in high demand. Every winemaker that I know loves European and Australian and New Zealand and South African wines. Wine is all about place. And when you suddenly have no access to most of those places, I think that's bad for the entire industry as a whole.
It makes me like sigh. We'll have to see with small producers, big producers, domestic, like just everything in our world right now is a little bit upside down and a little bit dot, dot, dot and wait and see. But how wonderful that one of the things we don't have to wait for and we know that you are doing right now is producing gorgeous small lot wines, your own production, your clients that you work with, interesting, underappreciated, fun, zingy, exciting wines. And I'm just so happy that you got to catch us up on all of the things that you've been doing in the last year and a half. So thank you.
Yeah, this was so fun as always. I want to say congratulations to Haley Bowman, who just had a baby. She's my director of production at Tambor Bay. Yay, she's amazing. Haley. Keep drinking.
Go visit Tambor Bay. Visit stereographwines.com. You can't buy these wines yet that Sally and Max have created because they're just about to launch. It's coming. But you can sign up for their mailing list. And that way, you'll be the first to know when they're available. You can purchase Sylvie Semillon on Sylvie Wines. What's the website?
SylvieEstate.com.
Okay. And I also want to encourage people to follow you on Instagram. You are way better on Instagram than me. Your content is really exciting. So what's your Instagram?
@winemaker_Sally.
Okay. So now that we've done this very difficult work of tasting these beautiful wines and nibbling cheese, it's time for pizza night.
Woo!
We're going to have our share and pair Sundays and the rest of our friends are about to come join and got some pizza dough that I started 2 days ago.
Oh my God.
Michael's firing up the pizza oven as we talk and we're just going to do what we do on Sundays, which is eat and drink and be merry and enjoy company with beautiful wine. Well, I think my favorite part of our conversation was her singing the Sip Spotlight jingle. That came out of nowhere. Thanks for being a good sport, Sally. I hope you are inspired. It's so exciting to have a front row seat to everything that she is doing. And the best way to follow and get these updates is on her website, SJB, for Sally Johnson Blum, sjbwinemaking.com. And then on that site, she actually links to all of her different clients. So if you wanted to get the Sylvie Estate Semillon that we tasted in the first Sip Spotlight, that is a beautiful wine for $42. You can go directly to sylvie-estate.com. But again, on SJB Winemaking, she links to all of these other sites where she makes wine from. So it's a one-stop shop. On sjbwinemaking.com, you can also see her husband Max's design portfolio and learn more about the creative and design services that he does. He can be hired for logos, labels, branding. He's really brilliant, and together they are just a power couple. So check out sjbwinemaking.com. Also go to their website, stereographwines.com, just like it sounds, and sign up to be on their mailing list because once they officially launch and their wines are available, like the Chenin Blanc that she and I tasted, you'll be in the know and you'll know how to get your hands on those. Be sure to follow her on Instagram. It's winemaker_Sally. And while you're there, give me a follow too at Nikki Lamberti. One of the wines that Sally doesn't make is Sangiovese. So shameless plug for my own Solovato Wines Sangiovese. She's a fan.
Visit solovatowines.com and make sure you use the discount code PODLISTENER for 10% off your order, and I can ship to most states in the U.S. So between Sally and I, we've got all of your drinking needs covered. Looking forward to our time together next week, and whatever you do between now and then, I hope that you sip well.